we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello. And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a special offer from the Salisbury branch of Aldi, read by Caroline Nichols.
Men's premium workwear vest. Multiple pockets for storage, including low-hanging large tool pocket.
Our thanks to Jane Wilde for popping that bit of smut right up our inbox. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Zoe Lyons. And opposite them on my left, Rebecca Front and Lucy Porter. Jeremy, who's being urged to be less private about their practices?
They've decided to say that doctors should have to release all sorts of information about how much they get paid outside of NHS stuff. I mean, there's a thing this week about BBC presenters earning over £150,000. Well, their names will be released to the public. And I am terrified that the amount that we earn will be released to the public and that we will face derision, pity and offers of food. No, but a minority of consultants do work outside of the NHS, but in their spare time. Most work more hours than they're contracted to do. They do unpaid extra work. And before they do work outside the NHS, they have to offer any spare time to the NHS. But the NHS will probably say, well, no, because we haven't got the nurses, beds and operating theatres. But thanks for asking. So then they have a choice how to supplement their income. They can forage for roadkill and sell it in pubs. Or they can go and do stuff in the private sector. What's more worrying is the gifts thing. That is worrying, because years ago I was asked to go to Barbados to do a gig for some doctors, and I thought, that sounds pretty cool, that. I said, why do they want me to do a gig in Barbados for doctors? And it was a pharmaceutical company, and they thought if I entertained them, they would buy more of their drugs. Presumably they specialised in morphine and various various palliative care preparation. Because the thing about GPs is they're actually small businessmen. They are not NHS staff. But that means that they are corruptible. Don't say that to your GP when you go in.
I'm glad you explained that, because when I saw this story, I thought, who on earth buys gifts for their GP? I mean, if you think about it, you let your GP do things to you that your own partner doesn't do. And frankly, they should be buying me gifts. But now it all makes sense.
You could give them gloves. That would be a nice thought. Usual trouble, you might be needing these.
But if doctors are having to declare how much they're earning, if they just handwrite it, nobody will have a clue what they've earned.
My dad was a pharmacist, and growing up, we used to have little gifts from pharmaceutical companies. And I used to go into school, and like my notepad would be kind of antidepressants. I did once get a torch, and the teacher at school kind of examined it and went, oh, OK, yeah. And I think it was a sort of a rectal examination tool.
So how depressed would you be if you went for an rectal examination and they brought out a torch?
Depends what you've lost, I suppose.
Do you know the difference? Miner's helmet, that would be slightly
Do you know the difference between an anal and an oral thermometer? The taste.
Thanks for letting us benefit from your experience in this way.
It is this whole thing of trying to make us resent doctors for being rich. And I don't know, I just think I don't mind if my doctor is rich. It is like doctors and airline pilots, I'm happy for them to be rich. Yeah. I don't want the pilot to have just missed a mortgage payment and have nothing to live for. But, you know, I don't care if my doctor's rich. Frankly, all I demand from a doctor is that they're sober and they've washed their hands.
That's more than you demand from your husband, isn't it? what do you think? What's the government's long-term gain here, do you reckon?
Long-term gain?
Long-term game. Am I speaking very
crush the doctors, humiliate and crush them. And it sort of masks the fact that doctors are asking for a report, an investigation into the weekend effect, because it's not necessarily true that people just die because they happen to go to hospital at weekend. There's all sorts of other factors, like people who go to hospital at the weekend tend to have put off going until the last minute, or they go at the weekend because it's the weekend and they've got their head stuck in a bin. Because, I mean, A&E on the weekend, you just think, how do these people get through life? People manage to get their whole leg stuck down a plug and...
When you're in A&E at the weekend for something quite minor and you're sober, it is fantastic entertainment, though. It's much better than Casualty. Because you see how it ended up. You don't have to go through all the preamble of someone up a ladder doing Christmas lights. You're like, oh, yeah. I see how that turned out for you.
I had that when I lived near Camberwell. I had to go to the A&E on a Sunday morning because I hit myself in the eye with my mobile phone charger. I just hit myself in the eye and I had to go. And, of course, every time anyone came in, I would be bumped to the bottom of the list because there was almost no one who was capable of walking in with an injury that was less severe. And the guy in the corner with a bit of a blink. But,
Why did you hit yourself in the eye with a... Were you trying to get out of Pointless or something?
Yeah, I was trying to avoid going to church, so I just sort of lashed out at myself. It was an accident. I didn't do it deliberately. It was well, it had quite a long flex and it had got caught on something and I yanked it and then went. I just pulled too hard and when it came free, it... Pop!
You're lucky to be alive, really, aren't you?
More people are killed by being hit in the face by mobile phone chargers than died in both World Wars.
You really are becoming increasingly reliable, Jeremy. How else are you able to make appointments now? Anyone have any new methods by which
just
you can
turn up and throw yourself at their mercy?
You can make appointments now to have a webcam appointment with your GP. So he's looking at his computer and you've got a webcam and you, I suppose, show him what's wrong with you?
Nobody looks good on a webcam, though. Whenever you do a Skype call with somebody and you see your own picture, you're like, oh, my God, I look like death.
Presumably, some of the things that you're showing the doctor, you won't also be able to see yourself at the same time.
Possibly, yes.
If there's anything internal, you'll be struggling to insert your smartphone, won't you? Turn it 30 degrees clockwise.
put the torch on. Adverbially, this is the Department of Health's plan to force consultants to reveal the amount of work they do privately, meaning that in addition to junior doctors, senior doctors are now also angry with the government. As a result, the only employee of the NHS who still backs Jeremy Hunt is a flesh-eating virus who, through a series of ill-advised promotions, now runs a medium-sized hospital trust in the East Midlands. It's been suggested that consultants are wasting time by stringing out individual appointments. Although if somebody walks into your room with their old chap stuck in a bird box, I'd have thought it's impossible not to have lots of questions. NHS. They're normally about sort of 10 foot up on the tree, aren't they? Quite how you'd chew that running job. NHS England chairman Sir Malcolm Grant told The Times much of what goes on in these communities is almost under the radar, fueling fears that some doctors may have been radicalised by dangerous extremists from so-called Bupa. Also this week we learnt that in some parts of the country the average wait for a cataract operation is 15 months. The shortest waiting time in the country is Luton, although when patients leave the hospital and take in the view, they often run back in and ask to have the cataract back behind. 2 points to Jeremy. Zoe, who's leading the way to victory?
This is the much-anticipated Labour leadership battle. The votes were closed on Wednesday this week, and we will know on Saturday who is leader of the Labour Party. It's been nail-biting. At this point, it looks very much like Jeremy Corbyn is going to indeed still be the leader. The thing with Jeremy Corbyn is he's tremendously popular amongst a huge swathe of the Labour membership. And I think this has completely blown the minds of other MPs. They just can't get it in their heads that actually a Member of Parliament can be popular. Like, what's going on? Owen Smith kind of conceded defeat already, hasn't he? He sort of said that it's kind of... He's put it out there that he knows he's got to lose because he's already said that if Corbyn wins, he won't be a member of his cabinet. You just think, who will be? We'll probably be members of his cabinet next week because he's gone through everybody else. So
well,
it'll just become
people.
Like a sort of timeshare opportunity, like a sort of national service. Each one of us will do a little stint on the opposition cabinet. That's what will happen. He wants to bring in a minister for peace and disarmament, and I'm not sure whether that's a national global opportunity or just one that would be within his own party.
Did you see that he did the famous mum's net thing?
Oh, yes.
All part of, obviously, him presumably having a sense of humour, but it doesn't come across. And I was sort of imagining all his aides and advisers saying to him, now, just, Jeremy, all they're going to ask you is your favourite book and your favourite biscuit, so just keep it light, let them see your sunny side. And he chose shortbreads and Ulysses.
Shortbreads even reluctantly as well. He said, yes. Oh, I'm very anti-sugar. And it's like, if there's one thing British people love, it's sugar. Do you know what the most popular programme that we're all talking about is, Jeremy? It's Bake Off. Don't say you don't like biscuits. Yeah. That's like saying I'd like to punch Mary Berry in the face. I mean, I suspect that Jeremy Corbyn will be re-elected. But at least Owen Smith can know that he'll be the answer to a really difficult pub quiz question in a couple of years' time.
Whose support has Jeremy Corbyn lost this week?
It's not UB40, is it? They're very fickle.
He's slung to that. No, his own first wife, who voted him last year, but has opted against this time.
Who is surprised that your ex-wife doesn't think you'd make a good leader of the country? I mean, my current husband I wouldn't vote for.
How are Momentum expanding?
Oh, Momentum kids.
Momentum Kids, yes. They're doing this little sort of... which is sort of predominantly about childcare, isn't it? To enable people to be politically active. But they are also offering to provide politically related child activities. I just had this vision of them sort of sitting in a room at the side of conference saying, that's a fantastic banner, that's really well done. Now, the only thing is, don't you remember that Blair is spelt B-L-I-A? Get that right and you're on a winner.
I think it'd be quite fun to have a fuzzy collective farm set. I think that'd be good.
Yes, that's their aim, is to increase children's involvement in Momentum by promoting political activity that is fun, engaging and child-friendly. So it's sort of like the Scouts, I suppose, but when the Union Jack is raised, it's burning.
To be honest, like this whole idea of, oh, it's great because when you've got young children, you can get out and be politically active. I had young children as an excuse to stop being politically active, quite frankly.
Chronically, this is the story of Jeremy Corbyn's almost certain victory in the Labour leadership contest, a victory that many believe destroys any chance the party has in a general election. Now, because we don't know the result yet, I will do another option for if Owen Smith wins. This is the story of Owen Smith's victory in the Labour leadership contest, a victory that many believe destroys any chance the party has in a general election. Meanwhile, Owen Smith has announced that he won't serve in Jeremy Corbyn's cabinet, carrying on his current practice of not altering history in any way whatsoever. Also, the left-wing group Momentum announced plans to start a children's wing with plenty of great songs. The wheels on the bus rotate according to the needs of the many, not the few. If you're happy and you know it, you're probably not a member of the Parliamentary Labour Party. And, of course, you put your left wing in, you kick your right wing out, you lose the next general election and you turn about. That is, after all, what it's all about. 2 points to Zoe. Rebecca, what's not all fair in love and war?
Right, yes, I will answer this question, Miles, but I have to tell you I'm not happy about answering it, and I'm blaming you for that, but I'll come to that in a moment. What's not all fair is that the Ministry of Defence has already been looking at retrospective alleged criminal activity by British troops in Iraq, and now they've widened the scope of that, so there's now apparently going to be a slew of new investigations into whether or not troops have conducted abuses in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Theresa May is very unhappy about that, and lots of Ministry of Defence people and army people are very unhappy about that and saying, well, you know, it's on the battlefield and you can't really control, you know, people are going to get hurt. But I'll tell you why I'm not happy. I'm not happy because I've not been on this show for some time, Miles. And when I came back after an absence of maybe 3 months, 4 months, I mean, I don't expect flowers. I don't expect a muffin basket. It would have been nice. But I can't help noticing that Kalman last week got Bake Off. And I get war crimes. And frankly, you know, my bumper book of war crimes gags is festering on a shelf at home. So I'm afraid that I'm not happy. So the best I can do, I think, is a man walked into a bar, or did he?
my advice to young people out there, because I am kind of down with the kids and they do hang on my every word, my advice would be don't join the army, because despite all the stuff about learning a trade, you probably will end up in a pointless, never-ending war. So, which is probably treason, actually. But because people say, well, a lot of these young chaps, so they join up and they don't really expect to get sent to war. I think, well, join something else then, really. If you joined the Friends of the National Gallery and they sent you to war, you'd have a right to be bewildered. But, you know, join the army, it's kind of on the tin, really.
The Iraq Historic Allegations Team, or IHAT, just received an extra £7.5 million of funding. Obviously, most of that may have to go on legal fees after Apple sued them over the name.
What are MI6 getting up to, and why do we know?
Oh, they're recruiting loads more spies.
Yeah. Has that piqued your interest? More.
It has. Well, it did fleetingly. But then I remembered how very, very bad I am at giving a false name in Starbucks. I don't think it's for me, really, somehow. You'd be quite a good spy, except that you do tend to, you know, get the giggles and all.
Yeah. In one of those hysterical moments you encounter an espionage guy. Yeah. Oh, my God, he's used the wrong dead breath to drop. That's absolutely... Oh, I'm killing myself here. That's unbelievable. This hasn't even the Soviet guys picked it up. It's one of the Afghans. This is going to be the biggest disaster. No, I'd be all right.
I don't think it's going to be like, you know, sitting around with a fly swatter and a Panama hat somewhere in the colonies. They're just recruiting geeky teenagers, aren't they? Because
no,
it's all online
then.
Stuff. So, you know, Bond villains in future will just have to tweet, at Spanky Manky. What an unexpected pleasure. Hashtag Shark Tank.
Because every time there is, well, not every time, but very often when there is an appalling terrorist atrocity, they'll then say, you know, that the person who committed this act had been tweeting about it for 2 weeks before. And you just think, well, how did nobody notice? Because it's a public forum. So maybe there is a gap in the market there for people just to sit on Twitter all day and go...
Yeah, maybe they just do it in a load of tedious tweets about Bake Off. And you just switch off. You just go, oh, God, he's still on about that.
Yeah.
And then they go, by the way, I'm going to blow something up.
Yeah. Back to Mary Berry again.
Yeah.
Do you think something detonated the moment that Mary Berry announced that she was leaving Bake Off?
Anything could have been happening. With Brangelina and Bake Off, I mean, to be honest, I haven't really concentrated on anything else all week.
Did you see that in Madame Tussauds they separated their... I don't know if they're actually mounted, but they I fell asleep listening to the news, and in my dream it became that Amal Clooney was divorcing George Clooney. And that's what can happen with dreams. So it'd be very easy to brainwash people, wouldn't it? All you've got to do is feed them stuff when they're asleep, and they'll believe it. That's how Radio 4 works, basically. I am such a shrewd fan of Radio 4. In fact, I've been in a coma for 30 years. I do love the moral maze. When the nurses are changing my dressings, it is a treat.
Curiously, this is the news that Theresa May is standing up against legal claims against the British Armed Forces, warning of an industry of vexatious allegations. Apparently, as well as diving for cover from bombs and gunfire, now citizens of Iraq and Afghanistan also have to contend with the arguably greater misery of cold-calling from personal injury lawyers. If this trend continues into future conflicts, at least it'll be nice to see the ambulance chasers having to dodge landmines as they shout at casualties, "Was it your fault or were you given the wrong sort of ladder?" Personally, I've always thought that the battlefield is like a family caravanning holiday, a place where the normal rules of human behaviour are set aside and you're lucky to emerge with your body and your sanity intact. Meanwhile, MI6 are to hire nearly 1,000 new staff, possibly including Mary Berry, trained to kill and at the loosest of ends. A little bit of fun for you guys at home. Can you guess which member of tonight's panel is an MI6 operative working under extremely deep cover? I'm joking, of course. It's always the newsreader. Two points to Rebecca. Lucy, who's vetoed the idea of a veto?
This is Theresa May. She's dismissed threats that EU nations will refuse to negotiate with the UK unless free movement for their citizens is agreed in advance. Now, this is despite the fact that the Prime Minister of Slovakia said he definitely won't. Yeah, so she's trying to negotiate with the 27 member states to deliver the Brexit people voted for. The only trouble is the reason people voted Brexit range from the EU is overly bureaucratic and the treated some member states poorly to I live next door to a Polish man and I don't like him. There was some interesting research this week. John Curtis, the professor of politics at Strathclyde University, said that there is no sign of buyer's remorse and that most people who voted Leave are still convinced they were right and most people who voted Remain are still convinced that they were right. But the people who voted to Leave, 79% of the Britons who voted to Leave, expect Brexit to mean an end to freedom of movement, while 61% expect it to include access to the single market. So basically, Business Insider, which is a magazine one trusts, said awkwardly, the Brexit the public wants is the Brexit which the EU officials say Britain definitely can't have. It just reminded me of talking to my four-year-old about what he wants for tea. Then, you know, you kind of go, do you want cottage pie or lasagna? I want ice cream. No, do you want cottage pie or lasagna? No, ice cream. Ice cream. Obviously, in the end, he always chooses cottage pie because lasagna's foreign. The reason that nothing's happening is that Theresa May doesn't want anything to happen because I think it's the bit of being Prime Minister that she finds really boring. Because she's treating triggering Article 50 like I treat doing my taxes. Where she's like, she'll prioritise anything over it. She's like, oh, it's summer holidays. Oh, it'll be the American election soon. Oh, it's Christmas. You know, Pointless is on.
She is an absolute misery, isn't she? She makes Gordon Brown look like a little ray of sunshine. It's like being governed by Eeyore, having Theresa. She's like is someone who's lived to 120 and then just sits grimly smirking with the satisfaction of knowing that all of her contemporaries died before her.
So, with all of these forecastings and getting it wrong, which they have all mostly done, haven't they? And the repeated thing of Brexit means Brexit, but actually, nobody actually knows what Brexit means at all, do we? None of us know what it means. There's now a group called Leave Means Leave, and this is just getting stupid, isn't
it? Well, to be honest, when you say Leave Means Leave, Leave has several meanings, one of which is to allow things to remain as they are, which I may have spotted a loophole. This is the people who want a hard Brexit, which is my favourite Steven Seagal movie. But they've rebranded, because Brexit means Brexit was so obviously meaningless, they've rebranded themselves as Leave Means Leave. I just wonder, when they do finally trigger Article 50 for the Brexit people, I hope it's going to be like, you know, the end of Indiana Jones, when the Nazis get the Ark and they think it's going to make them really powerful, but it just melts their faces.
The question is, does Brangelina mean Brangelina? Plainly no. And how will they disentangle those two names?
I was thinking it would be nice now that Brad Pitt's on the market if we got together, but we'd be Brucey.
Inauspiciously, this is the news that Theresa May has dismissed threats of a veto over EU negotiations from the Visegrad group of countries, all of whom are anxious to preserve freedom of movement so that their citizens can come to the UK and enjoy everything that we have to offer, like thinly veiled racism, Chessington World of Adventures, and yet more thinly veiled racism. Mrs. May made her statement after taking advice from her foreign secretary, who simply uttered the words, tricky chap, Johnny Slovakian, before falling asleep with his head in an atlas. Despite 2016 looking good, the OECD think tank said it was still predicting a sharp slowdown in the economy, but this would not happen until 2017, and by then we'll all either be dead or living in the woods, as God intended. 2 points to Lucy, and at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Zoe have 4, and so too to Rebecca and Lucy. We start round two with an extract from the BBC News website.
Nude pictures of more than 100 celebrities were leaked after Edward Majerczyk's Celebgate phishing campaign tricked them into visiting websites which were booby-trapped.
Our thanks to both Gordon Cameron and Kevin Gardner for getting that off of their chests. Jeremy, what sweet tale has left a bitter taste?
This is Skittlegate. Donald Trump Jr. tweeted a thing. It was an image of a bowl of about 100 Skittles, and it said, if I told you there were 3 poisonous Skittles in here, you wouldn't take a handful. This is our problem with Syrian refugees. Now, there are a number of problems with this, and the Washington Post did a lot of statistics on this, and they said the trouble is with that model that statistically to have enough Skittle refugees for there to be three in there that were terrorists, you'd need 1.5 Olympic swimming pools full of Skittles to do that. And then somebody commented on this, that actually this was a flawed model because there are 8,000 Syrian refugees in America, and the number of murders carried out by Syrian refugees is naught.
I wonder how many Americans have been killed by actual Skittles.
Who serves Skittles in a bowl?
Maybe that's the way they're served in the Trump household, and that explains many of their problems. They are, as a sort of family, on just the most appalling sugar rush.
Donald Trump Sr.'s answer to the Syria refugee problem is to build a safe zone in Syria.
Will it be built by Mexicans or Syrians?
That's nonsense. I can't wait for the American election to be over, because I'm suffering from Trump fatigue, which is something my nana used to get after Christmas dinner.
Everything he says, you do just think he's sort of... It's just a constant stream of angry, petulant nonsense. As the mother of toddlers, I do look at him and think, is he just hungry?
This is all off the back of the bombing, which thankfully nobody died, but there's been a tirade of horrible bile about refugees and general foreign people in America.
Why should people have been slightly more aware of the bomber before the events?
Because his dad contacted the FBI and said, my son's acting dysfunctionally. And the FBI investigated him and said, we can't find anything. He just seems to be a bit violent, but not a terrorist. But we were discussing before, Zoe and I, about pressure cooker bombs.
Yeah, where do you get a pressure cooker from these?
Well, maybe he had a mildly successful round on the Generation Game.
You don't see them. We had one when I was a kid, battling away in the kitchen.
Soda Stream, that'd probably work, wouldn't it? Get a delicious fizzy bomb that's just slightly disappointing when you compare it to an actual bomb. And your mum would be going, no, it's just as good as an actual bomb and it's much cheaper.
Distractingly, this is Donald Trump Jr.'s reaction on Twitter to the New York bombing, where he compared Syrian immigrants to Skittles, saying, if I told you just three would kill you, would you take a handful? In just one simple step, appealing to the sizable crossover in the diabetic xenophobe Venn diagram, and meaning that Skittles have now overtaken Robinson's jam as the most racially divisive sweet treat. Donald Jr. will one day inherit the Trump fortune, including Trump Tower, or if his dad manages to become president, the smouldering remains of Trump Tower. 2 points to Jeremy. Zoe, have a listen to this. You did not desert me, my brothers and I. Zoe, you enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. We all enjoyed that. But who were quite literally... literally, brothers in arms.
This is our tremendous brothers, the Brownlee boys, fabulous Yorkshire lads who are triathletes and have done us proud in the Olympics this year in Rio and in 2012 in London. And they were competing recently in Mexico. And the younger brother, Johnny Brownlee, he was set to win the last race of the series. And it's 33 degrees. They've swum 1.5 kilometres, cycled 40 kilometres, and then they run 10 kilometres, and it all got a bit much, as it would do. I mean, I get a little bit dizzy if I get up too quickly having had a cup of tea. So having done all of that, it wasn't surprising in that extreme heat that Johnny, as he approached the sort of final 700 metres, his legs went from under him. He did the most brilliant impression of a newborn deer in Lycra that you've ever seen. It was like Bambi doing Zumba, wasn't it? It was both slightly disturbing but beautiful to watch at the same time. And then round the corner, in the nick of time, came his older brother, Alistair, who saw what was happening to him and literally swept him up in his arms and dragged him to the finish line and pushed him across into second place. And the internet clip of this has gone viral. I'm welling up thinking about it now. It's really beautiful. Everybody just watched it and went, oh, that is amazing. That is so beautiful. Except for the Spanish. Went, no, 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 no. They protested. Even though the Spaniard had won the World Series, they still protested. But the Triathlete Federation came back and went, no, it's perfectly acceptable for athletes to help each other, apparently, in a triathlon. Which makes me question why nobody's had a tandem during the cycling part.
I think the brother looked a bit annoyed at the end, having done that. because his brother said, oh, it was really, Johnny said, it was really nice of Alistair to do that. Because he said, yes, because otherwise I could have won. And you could just see he's starting to think, you little... All my life you've done this to me. You were always the favourite. So I think he's regretting it now. I mean, he couldn't really leave his... He couldn't really. It's his brother and the cameras are on him. He couldn't go, all right? So you're back at the complex then. He had to do
it. Tell you what, if he was a Miliband, he could have done. That would have been a very different race, wouldn't it?
Obsessively, this is the story of, if I may use a sentence that has never been uttered before, a gripping end to the triathlon season. After Britain's Johnny Brownlee faltered during the final race, his elder brother Alistair helped him over the finish line, delighting everyone apart from the Spanish Triathlon Federation, who complained that one of their athletes had been robbed of his deserved second-place finish over the course of the season. The Spanish were even more annoyed when Alistair Brownlee celebrated by ripping off his shirt to reveal his back tattoo of Gibraltar. I'm sure that in time the Spanish authorities will come to terms with what's happened and perhaps invite the Brownlee brothers to a rematch under local rules on the streets of Pamplona. There is a third Brownlee brother who is either the least successful of the three or the most successful, depending on how you feel about triathlon. 2 points to Zoe. Rebecca, have a listen to this. I would do anything for love. Oh, I would do anything for love. I would do anything for love. But I won't. No, I won't do that. Well, Rebecca, dry your eyes and answer me this. Who hasn't benefited from an untimely error?
Oh, Concentrics are this organisation to whom HMRC have outsourced the monitoring of the tax credit system. And they managed to deprive this young mother of her tax credits on the basis that she was in a relationship with somebody called Joseph Rowntree, who was a 19th century philanthropist, who also, clearly unbeknown to Concentrics, created a foundation. Now, I mean, I have walked around parts of trendy hipster East London where you can believe that people are in relationships with 19th century philanthropists. And this young woman was not in a relationship with a man who died in 1925.
He's obviously doing something right, isn't he? Gives hope to all of us, I think.
It's a very sad story, but to me, it's a brilliant sitcom pitch. She was a single mum on benefits. He was a 19th century Quaker philanthropist coming to BBC Two, sowing his oats.
Somebody was told they thought that there was something to do with R.S. McColl, which is the name of a corner shop chain, and their benefits were cut off because they noticed that they had financial transactions with a corner shop.
It's you just think, if they went through my supermarket receipts, they'd think I was heavily involved with someone called Jack Daniels, Jim Beam and Martin I. Rosso.
Dramatically, this is the story of a woman in York who was living in social housing provided by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, but who received a letter from the government-appointed tax credit checker, Concentrics, accusing her of cohabiting and being in a relationship with Joseph Rowntree, the 19th-century Quaker. "I think this is outrageous," said her live-in lodger, the Victorian philosopher John Stuart Mill. Concentrics is, of course, the least popular character in the Asterix series. A local Gaulish government official who points out that Asterix and Obelix are seeking an excessive level of benefits despite cohabiting in a common-law homosexual relationship. Incidentally, the Rowntree family also started Rowntree's The Confectionery Company, following in the footsteps of their fellow Quakers, the Cadburys, and the radical Islamist Bertie Bassett.
Do you know Bertie Bassett's got VD? He's been shagging all sorts. That's true. I was in the metro this morning.
Two points to Rebecca. Lucy, whose travel plans have hit a hitch?
It is a man, and he's French, and his name is Cédric Claude René Revepre, which I learnt all my French from LOLO. And I was just pissing by. So There was a French man who was hitchhiking in New Zealand, and he went on a frustrated rampage in a tiny New Zealand fishing village after he spent 4 days waiting for a hitchhiking ride. The 27-year-old Frenchman arrived in the west coast settlement of Punakaiki, which is home to just 70 full-time residents, late last week. So he spent 4 days trying to hitchhike in New Zealand. On the fourth day, after no one had picked him up, he went berserk, allegedly attacking the Welcome to Punakaiki sign with a rock, abusing motorists and throwing other road signs into the local river, which is the most interesting thing that's ever happened in New Zealand.
Now, does anyone think this behaviour is unreasonable?
Yeah, I mean, if he's in a really remote part of New Zealand with a tiny little village where there's only 70 residents, maybe over the course of the week nobody was going anywhere.
Well, it's good he's gone somewhere really quiet to have this tantrum, I suppose, hasn't he? He could have had it in the middle of a crowded city or train station.
He damaged a sign. No one died.
But they're very helpful. New Zealand is really one of the nicest places you can go, I think. And if someone could have given him a lift, they presumably would, but presumably they were looking out the windows going, I don't really fancy giving that really furious French bloke.
I think it was the cloak and the scythe that did for him, really. Because that's why you don't pick people up when you're hitchhiking, is normally because you think, either I'll have to talk to them or they will kill me.
Or you drop them off and then sometime later you go back and then you say, oh, that guy that I gave a lift to, I just wondered if he was around. And they go, oh, he died 180 years ago, but he's still living with a single mum.
I used to hitchhike and I used to get picked up a lot because I had very short hair and people thought I was ex-forces, which is why they would stop for me. And I'd get in the car and I'd be sitting there, and after a while they'd say, must have been really grim for you, the Falklands. And I'd say, I wouldn't know, I've just done a degree in modern history and politics. And then they would regret having me in their car for the next 3 hours explaining the difference between Weberian and Marxist sociology.
And where were you really going in those days, Jeremy?
Visit my parents. Friend in Manchester.
You don't
bury,
have to tell
bury some limbs in a shallow grave.
We once gave a lift to a hitchhiker. Years ago, our kids were quite small, so the kids were in sort of car seats. And I was sitting in the back because I think one of the kids hadn't been well or something. And there was this young kid hitchhiking, and my husband just sort of went, oh, I'm going to give him a lift. And I was furious because I just thought, I'm in the back of this car with our two young children. This man could be a murderer. So this poor kid got into the car and was met with a wall of passive aggression. He was sort of going, all right, how old are the kids? And I was sort of going, why do you want to know? But of course, but not presenting that. So I was just sort of going, they're very young. Very young, and I'm very strong. Just don't try anything. My husband trying sort of jolly a little. Oh, it was awful. I mean, one of these days this kid is going to appear out of the woodwork and just say, it was you, wasn't it? That awful 10-mile trip.
Yeah, like my friend that's convinced that he once took you on a boat trip in York.
Yes, I'd forgotten about that. Mm. That's weird.
My friend took Rebecca on a boat trip in York, and she denies it.
We've been on boat trips in York.
You have been on boat trips in York.
We've always done... We're discussing this in front of an audience.
It's important.
We've always done self-drive, is my...
Self-driving a boat? I don't think it's boats you're thinking about.
You can do that in York. You can hire a boat and drive it. So
because you're scared of everyone, even gondoliers. You just won't... You won't let anyone that's outside your family unit travel with you.
You have to... It's an odd thing for me to lie about, Miles.
That's why I don't understand you.
When they find the bodies in the river in York, in the ooze, or I don't even know what the river is in York.
I think you're right. It's the ooze. I don't know, I've never been to York.
Just such a silly thing to lie about. Polychromatically, this is the tale of a French hitchhiker who went berserk after waiting for a lift for 4 days in a town in rural New Zealand. The hitchhiker apparently shouted that he could not wait to get back to Europe, Europe apparently famed for its relaxed attitude to people wishing to move around it. The hitchhiker was described by a local as a spoilt millennial, which in New Zealand means someone who really personifies the selfish and technology-obsessed attitudes of the 11th century. This story is a lesson to us all, so if you see anyone on the side of the road, whether you think they're a hitchhiker or not, best practice is to immediately pull over and bundle them into the boot of your car. 2 points to Lucy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Jeremy?
This was sent in by David Pearson, and it's a photograph from the Bromley News, and it's a sign in a shop window. It says, free child's battery-powered vehicle with every prepaid funeral.
Sounds like a very attractive deal. Zoe?
This was sent in by Bill Barden in Cambridge, and it was spotted in a handout at the Royal Albert Hall for a children's prom. And it's a little extract about Johann Sebastian Bach. And it says, J.S. Bach had 20 children, so it's a surprise he found time to compose over 1,000 pieces. He was one of the best organists of his day.
Rebecca?
This was read on the front
of the
Saint...
She went to York.
Let's just drop it.
She went to Oxford. They wouldn't have let her on the show if she'd been to York.
Can I carry on now, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're making accusations.
Go on, my friend's boat.
This was read...
Sat there, brazen as anything. Mm. Carry on.
I'm going to do my best Radio 4 announcer voice now. This was read on the front of a Sainsbury's sandwich packet by Naomi from Edinburgh. British chicken triple with chicken and sweet corn, chicken and stuffing and chicken and mayonnaise on malted and white breads produced in the UK using British pork.
Lucy.
So this is sent in by Martin Greaves from the BBC News website. A 17th century castle lost for more than 250 years has been rediscovered in the centre of a town on the Irish border. It was found behind a Georgian terrace known as Castle Street, which contains a building called Castle House.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Zoe have 8, but Rebecca and Lucy have 10. Sorry, I missed out a line in that bit, so I'll have to do that again. Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Zoe have 8, but this week's winners are a lady who once went to York called Rebecca and Lucy with 10. Before we leave you, here is a sign spotted in the cafe at Tottenham Green Leisure Centre.
Gym goers, why not add your own protein into our smoothies?
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Zoe Lyons, Rebecca Front and Lucy Porter. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair script was written by Sarah Campbell, James Kettle and Benjamin Partridge. With additional material by Kerry Pritchard-McLean and Liam Byrne. The producer was Paul Sheehan and it was a BBC Studios production.